Welcome to Voices of Your Village. You're listening to episode number 60. Today is the second part of our adoption series. We are hanging out with Annalise. She is a birth mom, and we go into all of her story and kind of what led her to different decisions all along the way. And if you haven't tuned in yet to part one of our adoption series, check that out. It's two episodes ago where we hung out with Shelby. She's an adoptive parent, but we talked about a lot of terminology in there as well. So that might be helpful for you in navigating this. All right. So Annalise shared her story very vulnerably, and I'm really, really grateful for her opening up about that so we can all learn and grow together here. The adoption series will continue. We're doing every other week with another voice in adoption. Will you do me a favor? If you are tuning in, will you screenshot this and share it so that I can see where you're tuning in from? Tag seed.and.so on Instagram when you share it, and I can come chat with you in your DMs. I like to see where people are coming from, where y'all are tuning in from. All right, let's dive in. Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, sleep consultant, child development specialist, and passionate feminist, Alyssa Blass Campbell. Hey everyone, welcome to Voices of Your Village. Today I am here back in action with our adoption series, and I have the pleasure of hanging out with Annalise. Annalise, welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Would you share a little bit about yourself and kind of what brought you here today?
Okay. Well, my name's Annalise. I am a birth mother to the cutest little girl in the whole wide world. Love her to death. I'm just finishing up my degree over at Utah State University in psychology, getting married. So I'm a busy girl.
It's awesome. And when was your birth daughter born?
In October of 2015.
Awesome. And thank you so much for your vulnerability and willingness to show up and have this conversation with us today. I'm sure it is an emotional one every time you share it. Anyone who shares any emotional part of their journey, I think every time we share it, there's a hurdle there. And to do it with me, with this voice, I'm grateful to you for accepting all of this. Can you share a little bit about your adoption experience? And if you could kickstart us, you introduced me to the fact, some new terminology that I was not aware of. And if you want to just highlight that as well for us.
Sure. So when we talk about a woman who relinquishes her parental rights, we say that she placed her baby for adoption. You give up a puppy, you give away things to the Salvation Army, you do not give away a child. So that's something that I think is really important when you're talking about adoption in general, to just keep in mind the things that you say and the way that they're going to affect the adoptee.
I love that. I think I love that your focus as you've chatted about this at all so far has been on the adoptee. I think it's very important to, and we're going to dive into that as we go. All right. You want to share your story with us?
Sure. I think it's important to kind of go back to the very beginning, because people don't just wind up young and single and pregnant. There's obviously a lot of history there, and anybody that's been in the position where they become a birth mother has been through a lot of things. You know, I come from a good, upstanding Christian family, and that, you know, we're not immune to things that are hard. I had a lot of sexual abuse as a child that I was really working through. And so after a lot of, you know, in hindsight's 2020, and kind of what I was doing at the time, I was 17, was just kind of looking for comfort in the wrong places. So I ended up moving out on my own when I was 17. I had just graduated high school. And then almost a month to the day later, I ended up finding out that I was pregnant with Charlie.
When you found out that you were pregnant with Charlie, I mean, I can't imagine how much that would rock your world. What were like the next steps for you? Did you immediately turn to like, I'm going to go to adoption here, or kind of where, what was that process like for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, the world does just kind of come crashing down on you. So for me, obviously I was really young. So I talked to the birth father a little bit about it. He was there. It was really important to him that we get married. He was quite a bit older than me, and that was not something that I really wanted to explore at the time. So then the next people that I went to were my parents, and something that my mother said to me that really has stuck through this whole journey with me was that the choices that I had made leading up to this pregnancy were not very smart and not very responsible, but that didn't mean that we were going to punish this child, and that she deserved to be just as celebrated and loved as any other baby. So that's what we were going to do. We were going to be excited about her. We were going to celebrate her. And that's how it's been for my whole pregnancy and her whole life up until this point. At the time, adoption was not at all on my radar. I think a lot of the reason behind that was that a lot of people were kind of in my face about it. You know, you're very young, and so this is what you're obviously going to do. And I was kind of at that time, well, you just watched me. You just watched me be a good mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my plan for a good 6 months until I really started to feel her move inside of me and realize that she was a real human being that I was going to have to take care of. So I really had to sit there and take stock of the life that I could give her. And to be honest, a lot of the reason that I chose adoption was because of the relationship that I had with her birth father. There was a 7-year age gap, and I was a minor, so that was obviously a big issue. We had very, very different ideas about parenting. And there was just no way that there was going to be a healthy relationship between the two of us. Even just as far as co-parenting, there was no way that we could do that. And so instead of bringing her into this world, into a family that I knew would be broken and violent, I had to find somebody that could give her what I couldn't. And that was the hardest choice that I've ever had to make, because I love her with all of my heart. And because I loved her, I had to do what was right, regardless of what I wanted to do.
Your emotional intelligence at 17, I am in awe of. I am also a sexual assault survivor. We talk about that a lot. It seated so. And, oh, sister, I went through every coping mechanism in the book in my teenage years, and I cannot imagine winding up in that place and having to make that decision at 17 with the toolbox that I know I did not have at 17. And that is amazing. Like, listening to you speak about it, to me, what radiates out is the emotional intelligence, the ability, the self-awareness of what you could and couldn't bring to the table at that point, and the empathy that you felt for this human.
For myself, it was really easy to do a lot of those things, to do whatever it took to make that pain go away. But then when there's another person mm-hmm. that comes into the picture, you just have to grow up so fast.
Oh man, I'm in awe of you. I'm in awe of you. So then in the next steps, well, first I also want to like shout out to your family, because I think there are a lot of families that wouldn't respond with support and love. And I think it's rad that you had a place that you could turn and say like, this is where I am, and that they responded with support and love. So shout out to that mom of yours. So now, like, going forward, what were the logistics when you were like, okay, I am going to explore adoption? Like, what do you do from there? What next?
So for most people, they will approach an adoption agency or an attorney, and just kind of depending on what works best for them, there are pros and cons to each thing. I actually placed privately, which means that we went through a facilitator that the adoptive parents took care of. But I just found their profile online when I went looking. And, you know, they really spoke to me. And so I reached out to them. And we ended up just going through their facilitator. So that's kind of a very simple, what I have to do is pretty simple. I have to find a couple, and for the most part, they take care of the rest.
Mm-hmm. We actually, I interviewed a friend, Shelby Dickinson, who also, she adopted a child through a facilitator. And so her episode has already aired at this point that people can tune into to really hear the difference between going through the adoption agency versus a facilitator from the perspective of somebody who's looking to adopt. But what led you to that? Like, why did you choose a facilitator over an adoption agency?
So there are a lot of issues with agency placements. There are a lot of ethics issues as far as birth parents go. I feel that for an adoption to be ethical, the expectant mother of this child deserves to have support and avoid any type of coercion. And that happens a lot more than I think anybody cares to admit.
What do you mean by that? Like, how does that happen? Just to kind of paint that picture.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Well, one of the most common things that I see is that an agency will say, you know, we will pay your living expenses if you place your child through us. And so that kind of puts, especially women that are in coming from a place of poverty,
yeah,
feel that they have no other choice. They feel obligated. So if they want to change their mind, if they second guess, they feel like they can't. And then essentially it's either I'm on the streets or I place my child. Right. And that's something that goes on behind the scenes a lot. And not every agency is like that, but it's really, really difficult to find one that's good and find one that's not. And so for me, it was better to find people that I trusted and go. It was a huge leap of faith for me, but it was, for me, a much more pleasant experience than feeling like I had to place my child through this big corporation.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So did you, it sounds like when you go through a facilitator, it's more common that you then know the family and have an open adoption. Is that true?
Well, it really depends on the preferences of both parties. For us, that's how it was. I reached out to them directly, which is something that I wanted to do. We talked, and then the facilitator, as far as I know, you know, took care of most of the paperwork and stuff. There's not a ton of paperwork on the end of the birth mother that she has to do, other than relinquishing her rights, obviously.
And when are those rights relinquished? Like, is there like a time to go back? Did you ever at any point think like, maybe when this baby's here, I'm gonna not want, like, how does that work? How did that work for you?
So those are kind of two separate questions. It really depends on the state. Some states have a 30-day ratification period where you can change your mind at any time. I'm in Utah, and in the state of Utah, you don't. Once your rights are signed, they're signed. Okay. But for me, I think regardless of what the laws were, when you make this decision, you make the decision, and you should not sign. You don't have to sign immediately after this child is born. You can sign at any time, and I think that you shouldn't until you are good and sure that this is the right thing for you and for your child, because not only are you going to traumatize this family that's been, you know, you've promised them that they're going to become parents, and then they're not, and that's horrible for them, it's also something that you can't not be sure about. This is not a half-hearted decision. You have to be all in and comfortable with, no matter what happens, this is the right thing for my child. Because legally, after you sign, you don't have a lot of say, and it's just the most healthy thing for you to be sure.
I love that. So at what point did you relinquish your rights?
So legally, where I'm at, it has to be 24 hours after you've had any pain medication.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And so I had her in the hospital for 48 hours because I had medication for 24, had her for 24 after. So that's around the time that I signed. So I was still in the hospital, but I had her for 2 days and been doing all of the mothering things. And that was really good for me because I needed to bond with her. And so I knew exactly the decision that I was making.
Yeah. Wow. And then what, I can't even imagine, Annalise, like the next steps from there. What did that look like?
Well, after I had her, the adopted parents, well, the adoptive mother was actually in the room with me when I had her, because that was the relationship that I had with her. So she cut the cord and everything. And then I kicked them out. They left for 2 days. Because this was my time and this is what I needed to do. And so I had her, I sang to her every night. We read her stories. We changed her. We did all of those things. And then it was time, you know? And so they had a social worker that came down and brought me the relinquishment papers. And that was really hard. It was the hardest part, I think, of all of it. Because you have to sign a contract essentially saying that you take no further interest in the custody of your child. And that's really difficult, because the whole reason that I had to do this was because I was very interested in her custody. I didn't want her to be torn between the two of us. But it just gets to the point where you have to buckle down and do what you've got to do for your child. And so I did. And that broke my heart. And it took me a really long time to be able to talk about it without just breaking down every time, but it took a lot of strength that I didn't know I had.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful for your vulnerability now and sharing this story. That strength. And again, I keep coming back to the emotional intelligence it takes to step outside yourself there. It's amazing. So then this family takes Charlie home. Mm-hmm. And you had chosen an open adoption, is that correct?
Yeah.
And what does that mean for you guys?
Well, it means a lot of things to different people, but this is what it means for us. You know, we exchanged gifts and everything was great. And then I think kind of the most poignant moment of our entire open adoption has been when I placed her into her new mom's arms. And so now she's not my baby, she's their baby. And that's something that I think is really important, is that an open adoption is not in any way co-parenting. I don't have a say because they're the parents. And that's one of the boundaries that we have to have set up. I have a lot of visitation. I see them every 8 weeks or so. For a while it was every other week, then it was every month, and now it's every other month, and it's been that way for the last couple of years.
And was that like something you guys set up ahead of time, or it's just naturally happened?
That's something that we had set up ahead of time. I think that's really important, because what you see happen a lot of the time is that a birth parent and an adoptive couple will say, yes, we want to have an open adoption, but not talk about what that means. Mm-hmm. And so open to one person can mean, oh, we'll exchange letters and text messages a few times a year. Mm-hmm. And then to another person, it'll mean, well, we'll have a meetup every single week.
Right.
And so to definitely be positive that you are on the same page, because that is going to cause a lot of hurt if you're not.
Right. Yeah, no, I love that. I think in anything, like, open communication is so important. If we got to know what everybody's expectations are. Mm-hmm. It's huge. So at this point, you see her every 8 weeks or so. And what is your relationship with her? Does she know that you carried her? Does she know that you're her birth mom? Like, how are those logistics worked out?
Mm-hmm. So she's three. So she obviously doesn't understand all of it. It's a very complicated concept. But her parents have done a really, really good job of helping her kind of understand what's going on. She has a book that has photos of me when I'm pregnant with her, mm-hmm. me when I met her parents, photos of us when I'm pregnant, photos of us all in the hospital. So she has this kind of visual aid, and we've read that book a few times together. And, you know, she'll look at it and be like, so I'm in your tummy here, and this is my mom, and you're with my mom. And so she's kind of starting to process that and work that out in her head. But we have a really, really great relationship. She's just always so excited to see me and play with me. And she has a good relationship with a lot of my family members. And it's very much kind of just like another normal extended family relationship where, you know, we'll go see them, we'll have dinner, we'll hang out, we'll play. And that's what's working for us right now.
I love that so much from an emotional development perspective. So your sister-in-law is how we got connected, but I don't know if you've been following Seed. So my work is in emotional intelligence and supporting it from infancy. And visual aids are amazing across mm-hmm. the board for anything. But I love that there's a space where she can talk about this, whereas it isn't made into a taboo subject where she's not allowed to ask questions. On the contrary, you guys have created a space where clearly her emotional development here is first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's beautiful. And I can imagine that it's not always easy.
It's not, but it makes it easy because I know that doing it this way, she's doing well. She's doing as well as she could, because adoption, while it's a really amazing thing, comes from trauma. You are separated from your birth parents for whatever reason that might be, and that's traumatic for them. It's traumatic for the birth parents. It's traumatic for the adoptive parents in a lot of ways as well. And so to kind of cover it up is doing everybody a huge disservice. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, everything we do is just to help her understand as well as she can, because if you don't talk about that, then you are hiding a big part of herself. And so she can't own herself. She can't own her emotions. And that's just not fair.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Again, that like 17-year-old with this amount of emotional intelligence blows my mind. And I'm super, super inspired by it. Hopefully we're raising more emotionally intelligent humans to do the same. When you told your family that you were going to place your child for adoption, did they have any like pushback? Did you, or was everyone like, okay, cool, we're all on board?
They were very much, you know, this is your decision. Let us know how we can help you.
That's amazing.
It was either, you know, if you're going to parent, you know, they weren't just going to let me move in with them and do whatever I wanted and essentially raise her for me. But, you know, they would do everything that they could. And I had a lot of different options and stay in school. And I would have had a lot of help to do that. And if I wanted to place her, then they would be there for me and help me in whatever way that they could, because I was the mom and this was my decision. And so I think especially for my mom, it was really hard to watch me go through all of this and not just tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But this was something that I needed, because if it was a decision that I hadn't made entirely on my own, then I don't think I would be okay.
Yeah.
And so it was really difficult for them to watch me go through this and to deal with the repercussions that they had to deal with. But this was my journey, and all they could do is be supportive, whatever way that was.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, Mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Amazing. What support did you have as you navigated this, like from a mental health, emotional health perspective? Did you have outside support that you turned to? Like, what helped you keep going?
So I did have a caseworker. She is kind of a weird situation. It was an agency that was no longer an agency, and so she's since gone private. But she had done a lot of work with birth mothers in the past, and she and I are still very close today. And we had a support group. There were several of us at one time that had children within a couple of weeks of each other. And some of us still go, some of us don't. There are birth mothers that placed 14 years ago and that placed a few months ago. And we meet up really regularly and we talk about it. I've had a lot of individual therapy, not just to cope with the adoption, but the underlying reasons behind it, with the abuse and all of the coping mechanisms that I had had. So that made a world of difference for me.
That's awesome. I love that you like joined a group and sought that out. I think it's so important for healing to know that you're not alone and that you have folks you can turn to who have walked that journey. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful.
I love doing this podcast so stinking much. The only part that really stinks is that I don't get to hang out with you and hear your responses and your questions in real time. I've been running Tiny Humans Big Emotions parent support groups in person with folks. We meet once a month and we hang out and we dive into topics like how to co-parent, how to respond to these tiny humans' big emotions when you are at the end of your rope. What do you do when they're hitting, kicking, biting? How do we build lifelong coping strategies that can serve them for years to come? Well, I wanted to include you on this because not everyone lives in Vermont, it turns out. So we are launching the Tiny Humans Big Emotions membership, where we get to hang out once a month together live. You get to ask your questions. We're going to dive in depth into these topics, all for a really low monthly price so that you can have access to it and so can everybody else. Guys, the more emotionally intelligent humans we raise, the better off we all are. So, you want to come join me? You want to come hang out with me live? You know what? If you can't make it live, guess what? You get access to that video for a whole year so you can reference it. You can share it with your partner. Are you ready to do this? Are you ready to raise some emotionally intelligent humans with me? Head on over to tinyhumansbigemotions.com and sign up to be the first to know when this membership launches so that we together can collaborate on raising these emotionally intelligent humans. tinyhumansbigemotions.com. Go sign up today to be the first to know it's launching so soon.
Did you always, when you were going through this, did you always know that you wanted to do an open adoption? And if so, why?
Yes, I don't think that I would have placed into a closed adoption for a number of reasons. First of all, just knowing more about open adoption was the reason that I even considered adoption in the first place, because there are a lot of emotional complications for me to not know where she is or how she's doing or anything like that. I don't think that I emotionally could have coped with that.
Mm-hmm.
And for two, I'm a very strong believer that if an open adoption is at all possible, then it needs to happen because that is what is fair for the adoptee. They should have the right to decide whether or not they want to have contact, and that should be available to them until they decide they don't want it. Because they are going to have questions. Where did I come from? Why was I placed for adoption? Was I abandoned? And for me to be able to be there for her and help her kind of process those emotions and explain to her what was happening in my mind, in my heart, I think is the best way for her to grow up. And I don't know that it would have been the best way for her to grow up to have all of these questions. And yeah. So I think that both for me and for her, I don't think I could have considered not having contact.
Yeah, I think from an emotional development perspective, I absolutely agree. Even things like family medical history. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. I got a lot of questions about the like financial and legal perspective that I'd like to dive into if you're comfortable with that.
Okay, yeah.
So were there any like financial implications, like medical bills or legal fees that like kind of added up for you in this process, or is that taken care of by the adoptive family?
So typically if you go through an agency, they're kind of the go-between for that. Since we placed privately, we kind of came to a private agreement. I paid for my own living expenses because that's what I felt was the ethical thing to do. Until I met them, I had insurance, but I was paying the copays for that, mm-hmm. On my own. And that was something that was important to me. I could have had help to pay for that, but I wanted to do it. And then when I had agreed to place with the adoptive parents, they took the bills over from there. Just as far as my medical bills, because if they were going to have a baby, they should pay the medical bills, as far mm-hmm. as my living expenses, I didn't feel right about that, but the medical bills were not something that I could cover. And so we agreed that that was something that would be fine. And then as far as legal fees, that's kind of on them as well. The numbers add up quite a bit for adoptive parents. But for mm-hmm. me, it didn't really cost me anything.
Gotcha. And that's the same if you go through an agency, probably too.
Typically, yeah, you'll just pay the agency instead of paying the bills directly. And then the agency does what they see fit with that funding. A lot of the time it's a flat fee and they will kind of work it out with the birth mother. So it's kind of a very separate third party. So that works well for a lot of people.
Got it. It's interesting. From the like adoptive parent side, like when I asked her these questions, I did not realize how expensive it was. Oh, it makes sense. I mean, with any legal stuff, anytime is expensive. What would you want to tell your younger self now that you can look back with the hindsight of being 2020? What would you tell her as she navigated this process?
I think a lot of it was just that I wished I'd known my own worth. I would never change my story. I would never change having had her, but I would have changed a lot of the decisions that I had made after I placed her, and a lot of the decisions that I'd made before. And like you said, you know, we all have our coping mechanisms, but I wish I'd kind of known what I was doing and been able to just love myself, because it takes a really long time to forgive yourself for placing your child, because it's, for one, it's just a socially taboo thing to do because people just assume that you don't take responsibility, and being told that so often made me really feel that way for a while and really feel like I wasn't good enough, that I would never be a good mother, that I would never be a good wife. And that's something that I still really struggle with. And you know, coming up on my wedding, it's something that's been very challenging for me, is to believe that I was enough. And just because my circumstances at that time were not ideal doesn't mean that I wasn't enough. And I wish that I had known that earlier.
Yeah, I think that that's something that so many of us still struggle with all the time. Mm-hmm. I run these parent support groups called Tiny Humans, Big Emotions. And during my groups, I ask, like, in what ways do you not feel enough? Mm-hmm. Because everybody has an answer. Mm-hmm. It's wild. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your vulnerability and your time. For anyone else who's walking this journey now, whether they are looking to place or considering it or have placed, where would you send them that you have found to be helpful or supportive in your journey?
Well, I think it's kind of a multifaceted question. First of all, you need to reach out to anything. This is not something that you can navigate alone, and it's something that a lot of people try to navigate alone. There are a couple of online support groups that I found really helpful. The most important one that's been valuable for me is Birth Moms Today, and that's on Facebook. That's just kind of it's a private group where there are a few thousand birth mothers, and we kind of all come together. It's very similar to this page. It's just kind of talking about things and how we cope with it, the good, the bad, the ugly. Mm-hmm. Another thing that you can do is that there are some agencies that are really good, and some agencies do provide a lot of really good mental health resources. So if you are considering placing, if you can find an agency that you are sure will provide you with those mental health services, take full advantage of that. A lot of people, if you've already placed, their chances are that your agency does provide some kind of mental health care post-placement. And so reaching out to them is very important. And then just taking, you know, full advantage of, most people want to help, they just don't know how. Mm-hmm. And so I think just talking to your friends and loved ones and people that you care about what you're feeling and what you need from them, if you just let people know what you need, they're more than likely so willing to help.
Oh, Annalise, I love that so, so much. I think in so many areas, people don't know what to say, or they don't know how to show up for you. So they stay in silence because they don't want to hurt you more. and they might say the wrong thing, and that's okay, that we can't expect perfection from them either. But letting folks know what you need, it could be as simple as saying, like, I don't need your sympathy, I need your empathy, right? Like, letting them know what that looks like in whatever journey you're walking. I think that communication is really important. I love that. Thank you so much. I am in awe of you. Thank you for sharing your journey with us.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community for all of you to be a part of so that we can all gather together to raise emotionally intelligent humans? Head on over to Facebook, search Seed and Sow : Voices of Your Village, and dive into that Facebook group. We cannot wait to hang out with you and collaborate on raising these tiny humans. If you're digging this podcast, head on over to Apple Podcasts, scroll down, click those stars, and leave a review. It really fills my heart to hear from all of you.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working, and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talk to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of there, life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking